ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
There are a lot of elderly people who don't understand digital banking, a lot of elderly people getting scammed, and not so elderly people getting scammed. We actually need a bank. Country towns need banks.
Yesterday's announcement from Bankwest that it will close all remaining branches caught many regional communities off guard. Soon we'll hear some of their reaction. And with a 10% rise in the number of drownings this summer compared to last, Surf Life Saving Australia says more education about beach safety is needed to reduce the number of drownings.
We can always do with more lifesavers. The solution that we've got to look at, though, is one that's practical. We can't be everywhere all the time.
I'm Alex Simon, and this is Australia Wide, coming to you from Whadjuk Country, Perth. We start in Victoria, where police have this afternoon charged a 22-year-old man with the murder of missing Ballarat East woman Samantha Murphy. Here's Victoria Police Chief Commissioner Shane Patton addressing the media this afternoon.
Detectives from the missing persons squad yesterday morning at 6 a.m. arrested a 22-year-old Scotsburn man. They arrested him at his home address and took him into custody. The man was interviewed over a number of hours. A number of search warrants have been executed. As a result of those investigations, he has today been charged with the murder of Samantha. We will be alleging that murder occurred at Mount Clear on the day she disappeared. In the interview with the suspect, he has not disclosed to police where Samantha's body is. I want to be very clear. I'm limited in what I can say, given that there has now been a charge of murder laid. The suspect, as I say, has been charged and he'll be appearing before Ballarat Magistrates Court. As I came into the press conference, he was very close to being fronted before the magistrate. Samantha's family has been advised of this tragic news this afternoon by detectives from the missing persons squad. And obviously this is a tragic outcome, knowing that she has been murdered. Our thoughts and support are with her family.
Victoria Police Chief Commissioner Shane Patton addressing the media earlier this afternoon. Our reporter Lexi Junowick has been at the Ballarat Magistrates Court this afternoon. Lexi, we heard from Chief Commissioner Shane Patton there. What has happened there at the Magistrates Court this afternoon?
Well, this afternoon, Alex, that 22-year-old Scotsburn man faced the Ballarat Magistrates Court for a filing hearing. Now, in a significant update, the magistrate ordered that his name, address and date of birth be suppressed. So from this point on, we can only refer to the accused as being a 22-year-old from Scotsburn. Now, he appeared in a glass-encased dock flanked by two policemen during the filing hearing. He was wearing a high-vis rugby jumper. And really, I think emotionless is probably how I can describe him best. He looked straight towards the magistrate, said, yes, no, magistrate, thank you. And that is really all we heard from him today. In terms of the police prosecution, we heard that they have a significant brief of evidence to prepare. They'll have until late July to get that all in order. And then on August the 8th, the accused will return to court for a committal hearing. So all said and done, today's filing hearing was very brief, but indeed on the scale of, updates for this major investigation today has been incredibly significant.
Lexi, Samantha Murphy has been missing since the 4th of February. Can you just recap some of the details of this case?
Yeah, absolutely, Alex. So it was on the morning of February 4th that Samantha Murphy, a Ballarat East woman, she headed out for her morning run. She was known to be an avid runner in the area. So as far as we've heard, she was just heading out for a morning run in the Wurukurung Regional Park, which is also known here as the Canadian State Forest. Now, it's at some point during that morning, she has vanished without a trace. Her family raised the alarm about 11 a.m. that day after she did not turn up for a brunch date. And this has sparked a major police search and investigation. And also, aside from the official kind of search and investigation, the community has also been leading its own searches. So is the interest in this particular case.
Can you describe the scale of the resources used in this case and that search effort?
Alex, I think the best word to describe it is immense. I know in the days following her disappearance, the police had the air wing out, so the police choppers, they had the police dogs out, and as well as that, they had SES volunteers involved along with CFA members. And also, as I mentioned just a bit earlier, the community search really ramped up in, you know, the weeks following Samantha's disappearance. In the, I think it would have been about the third week she was missing, the community banded together for what they dubbed a mega search, and that involved hundreds of volunteers that came not just from Ballarat and surrounds, but from right across Victoria. Even a person from interstate came down to help with this search effort. So a huge amount of resources put into, you know, finding answers about Ms. Murphy's disappearance, and also, of course, Alex, you know, finding answers for her family. She's a mother of three and was very much, you know, a well-respected member of the community.
And with today's developments then, what now happens with that search effort?
Well, we know in terms of the community search effort, they've said that they'll put this on pause for the time being. They don't want to interfere with any official investigation. In terms of the police investigation and their searches, well, we know that during the interviews that he has had with police, the accused has not revealed where Miss Murphy's body is. So no doubt police will be zoning in on any leads that they can find to provide closure to her family at this point.
And are police still calling for any community assistance that can be provided?
They are, Alex. So this investigation, even though there's been a massive development today, it is still very much ongoing. So police say if anyone has information and hasn't come forward to police yet, to please do so. And they're also still calling for any CCTV or dashcam footage that the public may have. They want members of the public to come forward with that. And as we know, the police are working through about 12,000 hours worth of CCTV footage and 700 pieces of information. So they're really just trying to get as much information as they can to get answers.
Lexi Junewick is our reporter in Ballarat. Lexi, thank you for speaking to Australia Wide.
Thank you, Alex.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
And you are with me, Alex Hyman. It's great to have your company. Yesterday, Bankwest announced that it will close all of its remaining branches by the end of the year to become a digital-only banking operation. Metropolitan and most regional Bankwest branches will close permanently, with 15 regional sites converting to Commonwealth Bank branches. Here's Bankwest General Manager of Personal Banking, Scott Spittles.
Bankwest will transition to a digital bank in 2024, allowing it to accelerate the development and delivery of digital services and broker services, for that matter, to our customers, which will enable us to meet the needs of more customers nationwide. We will no longer operate a physical branch footprint, and this will result in the closure of 45 Bankwest branches.
The move to digital-only banking and subsequent closure of bricks-and-mortar branches has been the central concern raised during the ongoing Regional Banking Senate inquiry that's examining close to 2,000 regional bank closures across the country in the past 6 years. Bankwest says the decision for the digital transition is influenced by rapidly changing customer preferences, with 97% of all Bankwest transactions now completed digitally and fewer than 2% of customers visiting a branch regularly. But reaction to the branch closures has been met with a lot of resistance. Chella Williams has this story.
It's a move that has a lot of banking customers worried. For the people of Bridgetown in regional WA, Bankwest is the only bank available, but will soon be one of the 15 to convert to a CBA branch. Former Liberal member for the Southwest region of WA and Bridgetown resident Robin McSweeney says banks going digital is inevitable, but the timing of Bankwest closing all of its branches is too soon.
Be digital by the end of October this year. I think it's too early to become digital. There are a lot of elderly people who don't understand digital banking, a lot of elderly people getting scammed and not so elderly people getting scammed. We actually need a bank. Country towns need banks. Everybody needs cash. I mean, the government's pushing us to a cashless society, but I don't believe that that's credible. If cash is kept in a small country town, cash flows on.
When internet and power outages happen more often than preferred, the main concern for regional banking customers is what happens when it all goes down.
What we're finding is, say the petrol station goes down, there's no FPOS, there's no electricity. What do you do if you haven't got cash?
Regional Chambers of Commerce and Industry CEO Kitty Pradonovich says the news comes at short notice. The reliance on digital connectivity is problematic.
What we're worried about is there isn't the connectivity or the digital infrastructure in place. So what we're seeing is, you know, it's really crucial that as big businesses move forward, they ensure that the needs of all community members are considered, especially in those small, remote regional areas. And they are people that are most vulnerable to being left behind in this digital divide, which we do have in WA. We don't have reliable connectivity. I mean, you only have to look at all the power issues that are happening in some parts of regional WA at the moment. We don't even have reliable power. So, and we agree to some extent that digital delivery is going to be the solution, but we're just not ready yet.
But what about the employees of Bankwest?
The other thing to remember here is it's also about people. You know, there's 120 regional WA employees that work for Bankwest, so they're not going to have jobs. And in their sort of release yesterday and in their FAQs, they talked about, you know, they'll be offering focused reskilling programs for their employees and then 24/7 contact centres for people that need help. We just don't think that's going to cut it. So there's 120 people that may not have a job in regional WA, so it's also about people and relationships. You know, in those regional communities, it's not just about the banking. It's actually about those personal relationships with people. It's about those jobs that people in those local communities have with those banks. It's about contributing to the sporting groups, volunteering on committees. It's a whole wide range of things. So what we're concerned about is, you know, the closure of bank branches can lead to further economic decline in small towns, many of which are already struggling.
Chella Williams in Bunbury reporting there. Almost 100 people drowned in Australia over summer, with a quarter of those deaths occurring in the week between Christmas and New Year. Water safety experts say the quest to get a perfect selfie at a stunning remote beach, as well as poor swimming abilities, are behind the rise. Reporter Georgia Linton-Williams has this story.
For 19-year-old surfer and surf instructor Neve Moore, a recent Thursday in February was much like any other busy summer day, teaching school groups in the water at Smith's Beach on Victoria's Phillip Island.
It was my third lesson of the day. We'd been down there all day with multiple school groups of different sizes, and we were finishing with a small Year 12 group.
While the surf was small, wind conditions were picking up, and Neve's attention was soon drawn to a family playing in the water nearby who'd got into trouble.
3-year-old and her dad were floating around the other end of the beach on a pool ring, and it just picked up the wind. They got swept out. And one thing led to another, and they let go of the pool ring. So they were left out there with no flotation device. The mum saw that, panicked, on instinct, went out swimming after. So they all got trapped out there.
Neve went to the aid of the family with a foam stand-up paddleboard.
And the mum, who I kind of took responsibility for once I got there, pretty much she gave up. She just kind of nearly collapsed of exhaustion. So when I was about 10 metres away from them, all I could see was her profile of her face. All I could see was her face sticking out of the water. So I thought she was actually on her back floating unconscious. And that's the moment where I sort of said, okay, this isn't just a let's help people get in. This could be really serious.
With the help of two other surfers, they eventually managed to get all three back to shore on their surfboards. The beach's summer patrol period had only ended the week before.
It's seen as a safe beach, a patrolled beach, but just shows you that it's not. The water is insanely dangerous.
While this incident ended safely, on Neve's mind during the rescue was a tragic drowning at nearby Forest Caves Beach on January 24, when 4 people died.
It was pretty much the exact same conditions to what the surf was like on the day of that Forest Caves drowning, where 4 people passed away.
Police believe the family got caught in a rip. It was Victoria's deadliest beach tragedy in almost 20 years. Across the country, drowning deaths increased 10% this summer. The highest number of deaths was recorded in New South Wales, where 30 people died. In Victoria, 27 people drowned. Queensland recorded 22 drownings, which is a 57% jump from last summer. National Research Manager at Royal Lifesaving Australia, Stacey Pidgeon, says a driving factor behind the increase in tragedies likely stemmed from COVID lockdowns when pools were closed.
Some people didn't return to the swimming pool or didn't go and have their swimming lessons and have stopped altogether. So now we're starting to see a little bit of a cumulative effect on that. Equally, we are seeing more people going to isolated and remote locations. We're seeing people go on holiday to new locations in unfamiliar environments, or they're going to places where they might have been before, but the conditions have changed since their last visit. Sometimes in a lot of these places, there aren't lifesavers or lifeguards, and you know, there's nowhere safe to swim as such. So we are very concerned about sort of some of these places that are beautiful to go and see, but particularly places like rivers, lakes and creeks, they can be very deceptive, very calm on the surface, but underneath there are still strong currents. You don't know what's underneath. The depth might have changed a lot.
More than half the summer drowning deaths were on the coast, with at least 54 of the 55 drownings occurring outside patrolled areas. Surf Lifesaving Australia is responsible for coastal water safety, while Royal Lifesaving Australia focuses on all other bodies of water, including rivers and pools. Both organisations are funded by the federal government and are aiming to halve the number of drowning deaths by 2030 as part of the Australian Water Safety Strategy. Chair of Lifesaving at Surf Lifesaving Australia, Chris Jacobson, says many people are entering the sea outside the designated safety zones between red and yellow flags.
There's a lot of beautiful places across Australia. People are wanting to explore. Social media, again, is a key influencer here of people sharing some of those lovely, beautiful places. We're also seeing that people just aren't educated on some of the dangers that are associated with those environments that we're going to. We know that majority of the drownings, unfortunately, over the summer have occurred in those locations that aren't patrolled. In fact, 60% of those fatal drownings occurred for those regional remote locations. And that's up 9% on last year's average, unfortunately.
I saw as well in the report, Chris, that rips are obviously a big factor. Do you think that there's enough awareness among the general public about how to spot a rip and how to navigate it if you do get caught in one?
Rips, unfortunately, are continuing to be our number one cause of drowning at those coastal locations, and they're accounting for 3 in every 4 fatalities that are occurring. And absolutely not. People aren't aware of the rips. And when we go out there and we ask people, you know, how to identify a rip, some people think they can, but they actually can't. So there's a lot more work that we need to do and that Australia needs to do in identifying rips. And then also what to do when you are in trouble, because this is something that we can prevent. And that's what's really alarming about these statistics, is that all these drownings that are occurring are preventable.
Longer-term data shows a 26% decrease in Australia's drowning rate over the past 20 years, but reducing beach drowning rates has been a major challenge. Mr. Jacobson says authorities need to develop new measures to reduce the number of coastal drownings.
We can always do with more lifesavers. The solution that we've got to look at, though, is one that's practical. We can't be everywhere all the time, and absolutely it would be great to have more lifesaving services, but we've also got to look at the other avenues that are available to us. So education being that key driver. We've just spoken about how rips is the number one cause of coastal drownings. What can we do to raise the awareness of that? What can we do to improve the use of technology and making people more aware of those dangers? And Beach Safe is a prime example of where people can go to start to understand some of those risks and what to do when they're in those locations.
Chris Jacobson from Surf Lifesaving Australia, closing that report by Georgia Lenton-Williams. And finally here on Australia Wide, in the lead up to Easter, there's a good chance you'll see more bunnies popping up around the place. While they can be very cute, the unfortunate truth is that most rabbits aren't of the chocolate Easter bunny variety. Wild rabbits are a massive pest when it comes to the destruction of crops and the native environment. So when it comes to educating the next generation, how do you teach young children that something so adorable is something we need to get rid of? As reporter Carolyn Horn discovered, one way is through story. This from Rapid Bay in South Australia.
It's a tricky thing to have to do. To write and illustrate a cute picture book to be read by very young children that tries to teach them that introduced European wild rabbits need to be exterminated for the good of the Australian environment and native wildlife. But that's the aim of the newly launched children's book, Banjo Frogs Concert Spectacular. In the book, the Easter bilby travels to a town set in the landscape of the Fleurieu Peninsula, intending to watch a concert. However, he arrives to find all the animals are too tired and too hungry to perform because the wild rabbits have eaten away their habitats and sources of food. So the Easter bilby and the other animals then head to the local school and ask the children to write a letter to their parents, asking them to remove the wild rabbits and plant native trees, shrubs and grasses. The book then ends with the bonk bonk sounds of the banjo frog as the concert goes ahead amid newly planted seedlings. The book's been commissioned by the Foundation for Rabbit Free Australia. Mount Gambier-based artist Bianca Richardson provided the illustrations, but the job of finding just the right words was given to Kristen Martin, an author, children's poet and Year 1 teacher at Fulham North Primary School in Adelaide.
Michael from Wakefield Press actually approached me. I'd met him a couple of times and I had pitched him something for adults, but he knew me as a children's poet and he still hasn't got back to me about the adults project. But he said, haven't got to that yet. Are you interested in this? And I said yes.
So what was the brief?
So it was to get the message across about the damage that rabbits cause and what we can do to undo that and to show how they affect the native animals.
I noticed that, and I'll come over to you here as well, Bianca, with the illustrations. There's no pictures of any rabbits in the book. That was a deliberate thing?
Yeah, that was a deliberate thing. The problem is if I drew a rabbit, it would probably look quite cute, and we didn't want the rabbits to come across as cute either. So if I've referenced the rabbits, it's usually been a quick little silhouette or the damage they've done.
So the message is to ask parents to take the rabbits away. Have you had questions from kids about, well, how does that happen? Or, you know, was it hard to sort of think, how do we word this?
There was a lot of discussion, a lot of back and forth, because I said, well, I couldn't even say get rid of the rabbits because a student got upset when my trial read to a few year one students, a student got upset. And I said, we can't even use the words get rid of the rabbits. It's a children's book. So I said, we asked the adults to remove the rabbits and we don't need to go there because that's for adults. That's not for children. I don't need that discussion. Someone else can deal with that, not me.
And it focuses on what could be, what life will be like for the other animals if...
Yeah, if there's no rabbits around, how their life will be much better.
The book was officially launched last week at the tiny 36-student school at Rapid Bay, about 80 kilometres south of Adelaide, with Kristen reading the book to the children.
Who can tell me what is this thing?
House.
It's not a house. Oh, it's not a petrol station. It even says it. It says S-C-H-O-O-L. It says school, but it is Rapid Bay Area School. Can you see it up there?
Yeah.
It's your school in a book. Isn't that exciting?
Chairman of the Foundation for Rabbit Free Australia, Professor Wayne Meyer, also attended.
We're trying to raise awareness about the need for ongoing rabbit control and starting obviously at a very early age and then hoping that that awareness will carry on through as kids become more aware of the damage that rabbits do across the country.
So why pick the hills of Rapid Bay and the Fleurieu Peninsula as a setting?
Rabbits around on the Fleurieu continue to be a major problem and in fact seem to be increasing. And the other is that this is an area with a, you know, a small school that is undertaking some revegetation around their area. They need to be aware of the need to control rabbits so you can be successful in your revegetation efforts.
And so the picture book, obviously, it's going to raise funds. But also, is it a way through the kids to try and get to the parents, some of them who might be new to land holding or, you know, have smaller land holdings in the area?
That's exactly right, because obviously children have a very big influence on how their parents think and perceive things. The other thing we're doing with it is it's trying to get a series of books over the next few years that deal with different areas around Australia, because each area has got, you know, particular kinds of vegetation and particular wildlife that are being affected by rabbits. So you try to get a book which is local to the area, specific for their plants and animals. And if we can do that, and we'd also like to get some of the books into Indigenous languages so that we raise that awareness as well.
That's the chair of the Foundation for Rabbit-Free Australia, Professor Wayne Meyer, ending that report by Carolyn Horn in Rapid Bay, South Australia. And that is Australia Wide for this Thursday. I'm Alex Hyman. I hope you can join me again tomorrow. Have a wonderful evening. Cheerio.
ABC Listen.